You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at Time for an Awakening.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day and a great weekend. And I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it's not and it has to get done, it must get done. And you better get it done, and you will get it done. And you'll do it safely. Because, you know, that Delta coronavirus, Delta variant is out there. And they're scaring the hell out of people, ain't they? You know, once again, I'm saying, they don't offer, the only thing they're saying, get vaccine. They don't offer any alternatives. They don't offer any supplements, diets, anything. Just get the vaccine globally. And the people who are pushing this are some people who I'm very dubious about. One is Bill Gates and his whole mindset of population control, as well as Fauci. So, anyway, brothers and sisters, just as I stated last year, or might have been early this year before, the vaccine became very prevalent. And I had a brother video that I got and played that. And basically what he's saying is, right diet and the kind of diet that you must have, as well as getting vitamin D, taking it, and of course getting out in the sun provides vitamin D and other things that you can do. So please, brothers and sisters, do that. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that, and the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays from 6, all times are going to give our Eastern times, because this program is from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. So from 6 to 8 on Monday, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jahad Ahmed. And that's followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then after that is from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers on Tuesdays from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9. The Black Farmers Report on Wednesday from 8 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening. That's right, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays at 8 p.m. here on Time for an Awakening. Tomorrow, Saturday, from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then on Saturday, tomorrow, from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Council
the Sankofa Council from 7 to 9. And they're going to have a good conversation. I saw the preview of it, so my bad. And then Sunday, once again.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
And then Sunday, and on Sunday from 7 p.m., once again, time for an awakening. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. Those products are that are produced by us, brothers, and now they're offering free shipping with a certain amount of products purchased and so forth. Check out WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tayemba with Africa for the Africans. And he has a trip upcoming in November 18th through the 29th. Although I was really gung-ho about going, but I had to maybe change because I got to drop some serious bread. And I've been doing that these last few weeks, man. So I may not be able to do it. But I know he'll have it again, and I'll eventually be on it. No doubt. So that's November 18th through the 29th, Tanzania. And then December 24th to January 5th, 2022, Ghana. April 1st through April 11th, 2022, Senegal and Gambia. May 24th to June 5th, once again to Ghana, 2022. And the cost is $3,700 for all of these trips. Not total, each trip is $3,700. Put a $400 down payment down on it. And pay as you can, biweekly, monthly, whatever the case may be. And then you prepare yourself to go on a trip of a lifetime. And everything you need is right here on the website. All the information, all the documents, the visas, and so forth. Africa for the Africans. Brothers and sisters, if you want to see photos of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007 and give my good brother Bomani Tayemba a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. Baba Rinoko Rashidi, he has a webinar this evening, this weekend. He has a webinar, and that is The African Image in Art, From Africa to Europe to the Americas. Today, this evening, at 8 p.m., from 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And then he has a one coming up on Monday, the Sidras, An African People in India, A Conversation with Pushtington Odanga, and him and the brother are going to have a conversation. Pushtington Obeng and Rinoko, and that's going to be Monday evening, 7:30 Eastern Time. And these are Eventbrite's. So there will be a cost. Go to Eventbrite, go to Rinoko, go to his website, drrinoko.com. DrRunoko.com. DrRunoko.com. And of course, his upcoming trip is going to Kemet, July, at the end of the month, July 31st to August 13th. Going to Kemet, his Kemet tour. And definitely we'll be talking, hopefully, we talked about it to find a way to have conversation on this program while he's in Kemet, and we're going to do that. All right. Habesha Incorporated. HabeshaIncorporated.org. These brothers and sisters are doing the work. HabeshaIncorporated.org. Habesha stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. That's what we need. And, of course, they have the Kashi Project in Ghana, where they're building, and it's, you can go online to HabeshaIncorporated.org. You can see the pictures. And, of course, their programs are Habesha Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and the Urban Greens Jobs. HabeshahIncorporated.org. They also have a program to help you repatriate. So go to HabeshahIncorporated.org. The LEDGE program. LEDGE stands for LEDGE stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. LEDGE program, LEDGE, the LEDGEGroup.org. Go to the LEDGEGroup.org. I know tomorrow they're doing a program with the Olutunji Village, providing them with energy at the Olutunji Village. And we were trying to find a way to be a part of that. Unfortunately, you know, we'll not be. But I definitely want to get Brother Nkosi and Peter Brown to come on and talk about it, because that's what we need to do. We got to be independent. We got to be self-determining. We got to be liberated. Brothers and sisters, we must be sovereign. And these are the kinds of programs that are necessary to achieve that. LEDGE Group deals with food, water, clothing, and shelter, the basic things for human life. They have 12 programs in 6 countries, about 170 people employed, over 260 members, and they need more members. You should become a member of the LEDGEGroup.com. Bibiatumi, ABIBITUMI.com, Abibiatumi.com. Brothers and sisters, go to Abibiatumi. That site should be the site of your choice for all kinds of good things about us. Information, clothing, you name it, crowdfunding, events, information, shopping, whatever. Bibiatumi.com. Tomorrow they have a special with Dr. Wade Nobles, SKH, and the Liberation of the African Mind. That's at 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock tomorrow. 1 o'clock Eastern Time tomorrow. Dr. Wade Nobles. Okay. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End, near right across the street from this Soul Veg, which has a brand new sign. I was like, checking it out, man. Soul Veg, right on. And some other things that are going on at Soul Veg. And up the street, of course, is the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which is located on Abernathy, Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. And they have, they're open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7. Fridays and Saturday from 1 to 7. And, of course, the Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar with delicious smoothies and health drinks and all kinds of good stuff. And they have vegan food for sale on Saturday and Sunday. Saturday and Sunday, you can get your delicious vegan plate. The Medu Bookstore at the Greenbrier Mall. The Medu Bookstore. Brothers and sisters, give Mama Nia a call. If you're in the area, stop by and peruse them and buy a book or two or T-shirts or greeting cards or whatever. The Medu Bookstore. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Black Dog Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, my good brother Gazimde Ajamu. He has a coffee bar that serves delicious Cameroon boil and other African coffees and teas and so forth. Give Brother Gazimde a call at 404-519-8107. That's 404-519-8107. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. There is light in the black dot. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Uchama. They had their Thursday night broadcast last night on Blog Talk. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU, Us Lifting Us. They made a program, It's Dare to Win. And the number to call is 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Every Thursday night from 9 to 10. From 9 to 10. Different members of ULU host the program and call in and give information. And you can too. Give them a call next Thursday night from 9 to 10. Before I get to another announcement, I'm going to throw this one in. And that's on Fridays, every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m., my good brother Yosef Muhammad former president, as I am, of the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters, has a radio program called Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness on Blog Talk Radio. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness with my good brother, Yosef Muhammad. So dial 563-999-3089. That's 563-999-3089. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop, located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. Inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. That's right, Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. Contact my good sister, Shelly Amundset, at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. Your one-stop natural shop. Let me get that right, okay? Sanjay Dash Haiti, my good sister Gabby El Aurelia, and of course you know the problems that are going on with Haiti, but with her, I tell you, she's in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, and she's doing great work. She's doing great work. Let me see here. She's doing great work of providing for our young people, and it's just really beautiful. It really is. Go to sanjay-haiti.org, and you can see the beautiful students, their uniforms. You can see the health care that is being provided. You can see the sustainable agriculture. You can see the entrepreneurship, all of those things. They need to be supported. That's Sanjay, SONJAY-HAITI.org. SONJAY-HAITI.org. Akabin Institute. My good brother. Where is that at? There it is. Baba Baruti. They have a piece they've sent out for Akabin Institute, African-centered online school tutorial program. The Akabin Institute is a full-time African-centered homeschool program beginning its 23rd year of operation. Courses include math, language arts, science, social studies, including African and American African history, and chess. Courses are taught by instructors who have experience educating elementary through college level students. For whom should this program be offered? To open to students from fourth to 12th grade. And it's the beginning of the academic school year of 2021-2022. And it's going to be via Zoom. And so that way, people all across the country, you two brothers and sisters who are listening, you can take the advantage of having go through an educational process with Mama Ya and Baba Baruti. And you can give them a call at 404-753-7237. That's 404-753-7237. Or email at yabaruti@yahoo.com. Or mmawalimubaruti@yahoo. Or on Facebook, Akabin Institute. And of course, the books that Baba Baruti has, Akabin House. Go to akabinhouse.com for the books, akabinhouse.com. The starting date for the classes is August 9th. School starts here in the Atlanta, Georgia area very early. It starts in August, August 9th. August 9th, school starts. So let's see what's happening. the Inye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. And of course, we always read the day before, the day of, and on Fridays, the day after, so we read three of them. July 15th. A promise is a man. He who does not keep his promise is not a man. African proverb. The Ugandans say that a promise is a debt, And this is an African thought. So if you have declared yourself a warrior of the people, then by default, you have willingly incurred a debt to our front line. You have made the promise to remove any mental excuses which may dissuade you from being accountable to African people and to do everything in your power to liberate us from the spiritual, mental, and physical shackles of European domination. You have committed your life to the promise of a Bibi Fahoriye, our victorious destiny, of full African liberation, empowerment, and sovereignty. Regardless of the difficulty or size, warriors do not break promises. And in assuming this debt and fulfilling this promise, warriors must ever keep their eyes on the African prize. They must pursue warriorhood diligently, commit to complementarity, build centered communities, rear warriors in training, use their genius to do their fair share of the work, protect everyone and everything of worth, develop our libraries, anticipate affronts, listen to the wisdom of our elders, honor the legacy of our ancestors, secure frontline strongholds, fulfill the needs of those who lack vigil and affirm sovereignty, exhibit exemplary character, destroy the menticide within, stand against all odds, share what helps African people, embrace no perversion, find a warrior's peace. Implement sound security drills. Study the methods of Yorugu's madness. Actualize sound nation-building theories. Engage spirit and be our African ancestors. Affirm, I keep my promises. Affirm, I keep my promises. That's one thing I've always tried my best to be, is a man of my word. And do all that I can to support those things that are positive, just like the things that I read, those announcements. I get no money from them. In fact, most of them I pay because I believe in what they're doing. The sacrifices that those of us, if they're in ability to make them, please do. If you have the ability to give, please do. And share, please do. Because we need all positive energy. We need it all. Because we are in one hell of a mess. July 16th. One of the main tasks of African consciousness is to affirm the beauty of our Africanness, to see beauty in African skin and those thick lips and those broad noses and that kinky hair, to rid our vocabulary of good hair and high yellow, and our medicine cabinets of bleaching creams. To de-niggerize ourselves is a key task of African consciousness. John O'Killens. Once Yorugu steered us to look for everything of significance outside of ourselves, they became able to manipulate and control everything defining us and all the reality from within ourselves. They have worked hard at making us police ourselves from within, and as they would. And nothing that credit should be given were due. They have succeeded magnificently beyond even their wildest imaginations. Most of us have become totally lost in them. Most of us are in hurried flight from ever meaningful aspects of ourselves, which has the possibility of righteously guiding and empowering us. But most is not all. That's right. They don't have all of us. They may have most, but they don't have all. And it is obvious to even those blinded by alien lights that Yorugu has failed miserably beyond the pale of cultural malnourishment, misorientation, and misalignment. We know us because we have faithfully followed a social, cultural, and ascetic guidance of our African ancestors, our warrior ancestors, and found our way home. We constitute those deeply self-loving Africans who constitute the center of our front line. We are those of us who consciously see, feel, and adore every melanated gene of the spiritual Africanness within our Africanness. We are those of us who know just how physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually beautiful we are. Let me say that again. We know We are those of us who consciously see, feel, and adore every melanated gene of the spiritual Africanness within our Africanness. We are those of us who know just how physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually beautiful we are. We are those who know that despite all that the lies Urugu has committed against us, we remain a divinely beautiful people. Ashe. Affirm all of my preferences are African. July 17th, African society was built on the spirit of helpfulness. G.K. Osi. Every one of our true communities has at least one person who is constantly, exceptionally in serving it from the heart. Everywhere we live, you are going to find someone who will, altruistically, without giving it a first or second thought, take in babies, make sure that there is enough food and that everyone is fed, and stand between danger and the innocent. Every one of our true communities has someone who finds a way to give when no one else is willing to or able to. These are the kinds of sacrificial persons who are historically formed the societal glue of African society. As living epitomes of the African spirit of helpfulness, such persons still selfishly, willingly give assistance the many they see as being in some form of need, just because it is the right thing to do. Just because it is the right thing to do. Some of us cannot understand their communal value to us or the spirit of the tradition which nurtured them into placing people above things and happiness beyond pleasure. They cannot understand giving for the sake of giving and the inner spiritual joy brought by doing things for others. And this is understandable in an intensely materialistic society and culture where receiving is much more valued than giving and mindless accumulations glorified well over sharing. This is why hoarding is the automatic response to any threat of society. Hoarding. You know, a lot of those who are hoarders. This is why hoarding is the automatic response to any threat of scarcity. As you remember, when coronavirus hit, they were hoarding toilet paper. It was serious, y'all. You couldn't even go to Sam's Club if you had a membership. And there were some places who were gouging. Because once you have some hoarding, you're going to get gouging. Yeah, I'll give you a roll of toilet paper, $5. Huh? Yeah, $5. A hoarding reaction is not because of what may become available, but because of the fear of others hoarding, and it makes it so. Well, they're going to hoard, so I might as well get my share. Urugu knows Urugu, and those who are culturally victimized by them flatter them with imitating the selfish, extremely individualistic, xenophobic, psychotic fears that they brought with them from the caves. That's who they are. And unfortunately, damn it, many of us follow who they are. Affirm, I generously assist my community without expectation of return. This is a true one. Affirm, I generously assist my community without expectation of return. We do it because it is right. We do it because it is right. Seeking nothing in return because it is right thing to do. That's why we do it. Yep. So today I really thank my good brother attorney, Maloe Davis of the Davis Bozeman Johnson Law Firm for being my guest this past Wednesday. And for those who have the opportunity to listen and call in and so forth, I thank you for that. And of course, you heard a brother who is committed and dedicated, you know, to African liberation, to African sovereignty, even as an attorney who takes cases that will help our people, not just the individuals or the group themselves, but our people, period. So I'm really thankful to him. and for what he brought. And I look forward to conversations with him in the future. And, of course, his book that will We Need You. And, you know, you can contact the Davis Bozeman Johnson Law Firm. I have a personal number. I don't want to get that one out. But I'll get his number so you can make sure you get his book. It is a good read, brothers and sisters. It really is. And, of course, good individuals in there that helped him along the way, that he's helping others. In fact, this Monday, I'm looking forward to the Black Man Lab. You know, I am a link in this chain, and it will not break here. I'm a link in this chain. I'm in jury, gave them that, and they always do that at the end of each program. So I'm literally really looking forward to it, see how the response is. And it's a great networking, good information for young men, great networking. And to me, the presence of a variety of older men, young men, because there should never be an intergenerational gap for us. I know it is for other groups, but if there's some cultural groups, or you know, there's no such thing as an intergenerational gap. It is a constant flow of those who are born to those who are about to die. That constant flow of building within that community. And that's what we need, and that's what we must have. So, look forward to that. Going to talk about Cuba, you know. First, let me do this. I want to, you know, I've been doing these for months. I'll continue to do this. You know, there's a few things I play, a few things I read. And this is part of the reading piece here, you know, because I love this quote. This is a constant here for me by Ezra Erohone, of the brother who wrote The Sovereign Psyche. Because this is deep, y'all. I'm going to read this for, this is something that we really need to say, yeah, why is that? Why is that? Something definitely is wrong with our minds, that there is no other historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who valued integration, who valued being with their captors. I mean, here's a clear definition of the Stockholm Syndrome. A clear, who value integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandon superior wealth of their own homeland. We abandon the superior wealth because we've been trained so deeply to reject it and to reject ourselves and anything African. It's a damn shame. It's a damn shame. This is, and also too, I begin to read this particular piece because this is a very important piece. This is what Lord Macaulay, who is addressing the British Parliament at the dawn of their conquest to rule and conquer everything. Not really, because this is 1835. They've already been doing this. But in terms of a colonization on the continent, you know, they've already been taking us from the continent and dispersing us all around. You know, they had become the biggest of those captive traders. You know, they had become the biggest. Macaulay, addressing the British Parliament, 2nd of February, 1835. I have traveled across the length and breadth of Africa, and I have not seen one person who was a beggar, who was a thief. Such wealth I have seen in this country, such high moral values, people of such caliber, that I did not think we could ever conquer this country unless we break the very backbone of this nation, which is their spiritual and cultural heritage. And therefore, I propose that we replace her old and ancient educational system, her culture, For if the Africans think that all that is foreign and English is good and greater than their own, they will lose their self-esteem, their native culture, and they will become what we want them, a truly dominated nation, a truly dominated people. Man, I tell you, somebody read that, man, it sickens me. It really does. It sickens me. In 1957, Ghana became the first country. So this is that, what I just read to you was the dawn of colonization on the continent. Because remember, the Berlin Conference was 1884-85, 50 years later, when they carved up Africa, lasting all the way into the 60s and 70s, 1960s and 70s. This is 1957, when Ghana became the first country, and Kwame Nkrumah was its leader. Kwame Nkrumah said in 1961, his speech of freedom, he says, "I believe strongly and sincerely that with the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity and innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture, united under one federal government, will emerge not just as another world bloc to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear and envy and superstition, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind." And then, of course, Nkrumah said this some years later. "If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling amongst ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we had suffered heretofore." Prophetic, isn't it? Yes, it is. That's why, brothers and sisters, we need to be one, a one Africa. Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. Become a member of the Pan-African Federalist Movement. Read about it. Embrace it. One Africa. It is the salvation, not Jesus Christ, not Christian religion or any other religion. The salvation for African people is our unity, is establishing the continent for the purpose of all African people. To be totally liberated, African people must come to know the nature of the European thought and their behavior in order to understand the effect that European has had on our ability to think, even think victoriously. We must be able to separate our thoughts from Europeans' thoughts so we can visualize a future that is not dominated or determined by Europe. This is demanded by an African-centered view because why? We are Africans. Also, because the future towards which Europe leads us is genocide. Dr. Marimba Ani. The future for African people. That's the direction we must go. That's the future of African people. So we're going to talk about the Cuban situation. I know that a lot of us, because we're in America, we listen to the radio, we read the newspaper, we watch TV. We're indoctrinated with the hatred of Cuba, a communist country, 90 miles off the shore of the United States, off Florida. For so long, this country has suffered. And then when Barack Obama was president, they tried to open up a relationship. Understand something. It is not What's happening now in Cuba is not because of communism. It's because of the United States' history of its embargo on Cuba. A few countries have came to its rescue or came to its assistance. The Soviet Union for many decades, of course, led to the Cuban Missile Crisis. We're going to talk about that. Listen to that. You know. And then, of course, when it was tough, I was in Cuba. Once that was ending, and many of the young people that I had a chance to talk with, you know, it's not that they want American democracy, because they see that for what it is, America hypocrisy, but they want more freedoms. They want more abilities, but that comes with a society that has the kinds of monies and the kinds, and Cuba doesn't have that because they don't have the industries. You know, they got to do better than cigars and rum, you know? Although, got to admit to those who smoke cigars, I don't, that the best is the Cuban cigars, you know? But they don't have the industry, so. And of course, they could have a great vacation industry or tourist industry. But of course, once Trump took over, he ended that. Because you could go on a couple of airlines and fly into Havana. You can't now. That ended it with Trump. Once again, tightening the screws on a country, on an island country, on a tiny island country who has sustained itself for all these many decades, for all the times that Fidel Castro's life has been threatened, exploding cigars and everything like that. I mean, I need to look at and find out how many times his life has been threatened. I'll probably come up with that after the break. How many chances they tried to kill this man. And supposedly Raul Castro stepped down. I don't know the name of the gentleman who is presently, but I know Raul Castro came out to try to talk to the people who were demonstrating and so forth. I don't know how that went, because of course we get, unless you find a alternative television, and there is some, you know, there's some news. I wish they still had Al Jazeera. I enjoyed Al Jazeera. You know, they don't have Al Jazeera here in this country anymore. You know, they don't want that. We don't like that. We don't want that. You know, because see, one thing that many of our people don't understand, because you think this is a great country. We have our freedoms. We have the freedom to believe in this and that, you know, and that everything that comes at us is objective, is fair, you know, and we're trying to believe that, you know, and that this is the best country in the world, and that many people written in is that I can't deny that many people do. They risk their lives to come here. Many people put their life savings into a lottery. And there's some countries that offer a lottery to the United States. If you win the lottery, you come here and you got to have a sponsor here. You make those connections and here you are. But of course, there are some people who have come here. It wasn't all of that, because it's not. And some went back. But the real deal is once we got to understand that European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is global. And the United States of America is the military arm of the global white supremacy, if you want to use that term. I don't like to use that term. That's why I use European, Caucasian extremism, because they are very extreme. Racism, because they created racism. Race is not even a real concept, but they created it, giving themselves the top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. That's why globally we suffer the way we do. That's why globally people who are deeply melanated hate themselves, because they're so dark. Because of why? European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. They believe that they have the privilege to do whatever the hell they want to do, when they want to do it, and how they want to do it. And they don't give a damn who they do it to. So this is the deal. So we're going to learn a little history about Cuba and the Cuban Revolution and what it means today. And like I said, you know, you have the Cubans who stopped traffic in Florida because they want. It's just like when Fidel died, they were partying in on his death, they were partying in Little Havana, in Miami, and in the South Florida. Because, see, when Batista was the president and they got rid of him, what they also did when they ushered in Fidel Castro in that revolution was eliminate racism that was so prevalent in Cuba. Because dark-skinned people, you were slaves. You were enslaved, rather, to the sugar plantations, tobacco plantations, and so forth. And all these rich Cubans who had money, middle class, upper class, all the crime, all the mafia that was in Cuba, all the things. You could go to Cuba for prostitution. Yeah, you can go to Cuba. They had all kinds of places you could party at. But once he took over, that ended. And those people left because they didn't want to be a part of that. They had wealth. They understood they may be talking about sharing that wealth with people who at one time were their captives. And that wasn't sitting well with them. So they got out. They went to Florida. And they've tried to do some undermining things ever since. They tried to kill Fidel Castro, I don't know how many times, you know. And so they got out. And so when he died, they celebrated. And now they're having these demonstrations in Cuba. They are demonstrating as well in Florida, in Miami. They stopped traffic on a busy interstate. They stopped traffic. They want the United States, this country. And of course, Biden said he supports the Cuban people. You know, do you support all the Cuban people? Because what I've seen was not all of the Cuban people. There have been demonstrations that support Cuba and the Cuban Revolution. The problem is that they don't have, see, because if they had the ability to have businesses, if it truly was open, people could come there and visit, and tourism and so forth, and other industries, Cuba would be fine, particularly with the kind of system it has, because not one family or a group of people would dominate, but it would be shared amongst the people. It would be shared amongst them. But because they don't, they have food shortages. Other things that happen there in Cuba that negatively affect the people. But believe me, capitalism is not the answer. I would suggest, some kind of democratic socialism. Whatever the case may be, a way where we all can live and love freely, and we all share in, not just a small group, not just the people who look more European than those that don't. That's what we're talking about. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us on this Friday.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media.
part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Papa don't take no mess. James Brown. That's right. Bobby Bird and the famous Flames, or Fred Wesley and the JBs. It don't matter. It's James Brown and it's cold. Papa don't take no mess. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, on Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And that's followed by from 8 to 9, from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Cambon and Nataki Cambon. And following that, at 9 p.m. from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Then on Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report. And then on Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. That's this evening, family, at 8 p.m. On Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Council. The Sankofa Council from 7 to 9. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m. on Sunday, once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking today about Cuba. It's been in the news. They're having problems in Cuba, like all around the world, the coronavirus. A lot of people have lost livelihoods. Things have been happening drastically, unfortunately, for many people. When I went to Cuba, not the second time, because the second time it was a cruise to Cuba, and we landed on the island, got off, visit this, took some pictures, went to one of the places you can buy cigars and buy rum and so forth. State store. It's a state store. You know, and then got back on the boat. We also went to where you can buy stuff. Everybody has the same stuff and everybody grabs you. No, buy here, you know. That's always tough because, you know, you want to be supportive, you know. But the first time I went to Cuba was with Pastors for Peace, IFCO Pastors for Peace. And there was a caravan to Cuba. What that is that people who believe in Cuban sovereignty and believe Cuban independence and who believe the embargo is illegal and bad, and as it is, they become pastors for peace. They become individuals who collect materials for the caravan. Wherever you start from, you get to the closest city where the caravan is going to be. You join the caravan. You assist in getting goods, books, clothes, not a lot of hand-me-down stuff, new clothes. Although they weren't supposed to have any intellectual equipment, i.e. computers and so forth, but, you know, there were computers and so forth, and plumbing, all kinds of stuff to assist the Cuban people. So from various parts of the country, the caravan moves, stops at various cities, addresses the issues to the people, gather more equipment, maybe donations, continue to move towards McAllen, Texas. McAllen, Texas is right on the border. Right on the border, and right across the border is Reynoso, Texas. And then you leave from Reynoso, then go to Tampico. In Tampico, Texas, the caravan moves from Reynoso to Tampico, and then it's all been sorted out. It's already now to be unloaded to go on the containers on the ships, and some of the buses will do the same, you know. And then we take a flight from, the people take a flight from Tampico to Havana, and the materials that have been collected and so forth, they sail from that point going to Cuba, you know. And I stayed at the Martin Luther King Center, and it was good. I mean, we met up with other groups of our people at various activities, just, you know, really beautiful. And at that time, you know, Cuba was still, you know, doing decent because the fall of the fall of the USSR or Russia or whatever. And so a lot of the money that used to come to Cuba to help sustain it was not coming, you know, and they realized the shortages that would be taking place in the very near future. And of course, then Venezuela began to assist Cuba when Hugo Chavez was there and now Maduro. But of course, Venezuela has their issues, of course, with helping to sustain their people. So, you know, the bottom line is whatever government a country has, whatever government they have, that's not the issue. Are the people, you know, being fed? If they're not, find ways to do so. Do the people have a livelihood? If not, find ways to make sure they have a livelihood. You know, granted, Cuba, you know, was always there for sugar cane and fruits, so forth, and of course, rum and cigars. And like I said, prior to Cuba, prior to Castro, Batista was there, and he was a dictator, and he allowed the mafia to come in. People would vacation to Cuba, prostitution, alcoholism, and so forth, you know. And of course, also too, you had some families were making big money because they had land. They were like plantations. Well, they were. And they had Africans working literally sometimes for nothing. And that was happening. And the Cuban Revolution ended that. In fact, I was talking with one of the brothers who went with Che Guevara to Angola to fight in the war, you know. Many of them. In fact, he said even he had malaria. He overcame it. But in fact, they had sent a lot of Africans to fight in that war because that would be logical. You know? So, yeah, this is deep. This is Cuba. So I'm going to play this and this particular piece and on the Cuban Revolution.
In today's video, we're looking at the Cuban Revolution. There are two essential questions that you should be able to answer by the end of this video. The first, what was Cuba like prior to the Cuban Revolution of 1959? And the second, who was Fidel Castro and what did he do? Let's begin by looking at some background information on Cuba from the 1930s and the early 1950s. In September 1933, a man by the name of Fulgencio Batista took control of the government of Cuba through a military coup. He was extremely right-wing, almost, if not entirely, fascist, and he was supported by the USA from the outset. A few months after his coup, the USA recognized his new right-wing government. In 1937, Batista allowed the formation of rival political parties. However, he controlled the government completely until 1944. And what that meant was that although some other people were elected president at this time, Batista always used them, sort of like a puppet, to actually take over real control. In 1944, he was ousted and moved to Florida. However, in 1948, he moved back to Cuba and again took up a position in government. In 1951, he began to campaign to run for president in the election of 1952. Now, we need to know that in Cuba in the 1950s, government corruption was rampant, and there was a new political candidate on the scene named Fidel Castro, who was running for Congress under an anti-corruption party platform. Castro was an interesting fellow. He graduated from the University of Havana in 1950 with a degree in law. And it was during his time in university that he became interested in politics. In 1952, Castro was also running for Congress. However, in March of 1952, before the election could occur, Batista seized power, ousted the president, Carlo Prio Socarrás, in a bloodless coup, and basically took over. So, due to Batista's coup, there was no Cuban election in 1952. And this prompted Castro to begin planning a popular uprising in Cuba. Castro, as we will see, had three attempts at taking over and overthrowing the Cuban government and making a change in Cuba. His first attempt was on July 26, 1953. At this time, Castro led 120 men to storm a military barracks in order to steal weapons so that he could attempt his military revolution. The result was a major fail. Many rebels were killed. Castro himself went to jail with other rebels, and basically it was horrible. Once released, Castro ran away to Mexico because Batista was going to kill him. Then again, on November 26, 1953, about 3 years later, Castro returned, sailing to the east coast of Cuba with 81 men. However, the moment they got to the coast, government forces ambushed them and many were killed. In fact, there were only 18 survivors, and these 18 survivors included Castro, Che Guevara, and Castro's brother Raul Castro. They fled to the Sierra Maestra Mountains in the south, where they stayed in hiding for 2 years, building their army, developing their political ideas, as well as their strategy. December 31, 1958 is probably a big event to remember. Before we look at this, we need to learn a little bit more about Batista's regime. It was brutal. The rich people in Cuba did well if they rewarded Batista. There are mobsters and mafia all over the place, and Cuba basically became a playground for wealthy Americans with casinos and dancing. However, the regular Cubans were living in extreme poverty, and this made Cuban people increasingly dissatisfied with Batista's government. He was taxing them too much. They had nothing. And a lot of this money was going to the states and also into Batista's pockets. It was very corrupt, so the Cuban people were really unhappy. On December 31st, Batista lost the support of the Cuban army, and he gathered all of his friends together and left the country, going to Spain and Portugal, where he lived like a king because he had amassed a huge personal fortune. He actually died in exile in 1973. Everybody was happy that Batista had left, and Castro arrived in Havana a few days later. People loved Castro, and one of his first speeches to the Cuban public was full of powerful symbolism. This is a photo from that first speech. In it, you can see a white dove sitting on his shoulder and a white dove sitting near to where he was speaking. According to Cuban beliefs, the white dove symbolized that Castro was going to deliver Cuba from all of the bad things that had happened to it in its past, and lead it towards a very bright and strong future. So Cubans were extremely happy. However, America was not so happy that they had just lost an ally that they had used to have, And now there was a seemingly communist government within about 160 kilometers from the American border. And we will see in our next videos how the Cuban Revolution led to the Cuban Missile Crisis. Thanks for watching. In today's video, we're looking at the Bay of Pigs invasion, which, in a report by the CIA after the invasion occurred, was called the perfect failure. So by the end of this video, there are three questions you should be able to answer. The first, what is a sphere of influence? The second, how did the Americans plan to get rid of Castro, and why did they believe that this plan would work? And the third, what were the results of the Bay of Pigs failure? So before we start looking directly at the Bay of Pigs invasion, let's have a little review from our last video. In 1958, Fidel Castro overthrew Fulgencio Batista, who was dictator of Cuba, in a three-year guerrilla campaign. And Fidel Castro became the leader of Cuba. So Cuba became a seemingly communist state within the American sphere of influence. Here's a map of the spheres of influence. And basically on this map, what you can see is that anything that's blue was in the American sphere of influence, and anything in red was in the Soviet sphere of influence. And a sphere of influence is any area in which one country, for example the USA or Russia, had a lot of power over another country or countries. So you can see the Americans have power over all the countries in blue, and the Soviets have, in their sphere of influence, power or a connection with all the countries that are in red. So that is what a sphere of influence is. So basically, the Americans are very afraid because now there seems to be a communist government in their sphere of influence, very close to their country. So, from 1959 to 1961, there was a frosty relationship between the USA and Cuba, but there was no direct confrontation. We need to know that the upper and middle class Cubans were starting to migrate to the USA, particularly to Miami, because it's very close to Cuba, and you can still find a lot of Cuban migrants living in Miami today. These Cubans were migrating because Castro had begun taking over U.S. private property and U.S.-owned businesses. So anyone with a connection to the U.S. or the Batista regime would want to get out of the country. However, the USA was able to maintain its naval base in Guantanamo Bay, which is in the far south of Cuba. Castro said that Americans living in Cuba were safe and that he just wanted to run Cuba without interference. But people were getting worried because as Castro took over these businesses, people were beginning to think that Castro was a communist. In the summer of 1960, reports are heard that Cuba is receiving arms from the USSR and that U.S. spies know about this. However, it was not until 1961 that we see any action about trying to get rid of Castro. So the U.S. believed that Castro was not a popular leader, and they believed this because it was the upper and middle class Cuban migrants who didn't like Castro who were telling them this. These migrants told the U.S. that Castro was not popular, and that if there was an American-backed invasion, the Cuban people would support it. So, in March of 1960, Eisenhower directed the CIA to develop a plan for the invasion of Cuba and the overthrow of Castro. He called this brigade of people Brigade 2506. President Kennedy was elected in November of 1960, and soon after he took office in 61, he gave consent to this plan. So there was a plan to have the CIA-backed revolution to overthrow Castro and replace him with a capitalist government sympathetic to the USA. The US wanted to make it seem as if the Americans were not backing the revolution. They want to make it seem like the revolution was actually developed by the Cuban migrants themselves. So the USA supplied arms, trained, equipped, and transported 1,400 anti-Castro exiles, those upper and middle class Cubans who had moved to Miami, to Guatemala. And they invaded Cuba on April 17, 1961, at the Bay of Pigs, which is just south of Havana. So what happened? Basically, Castro knew about the invasion. Perhaps some of the exiles weren't as tight-lipped as they should have been. Perhaps Castro's spies were really great. But whatever it was, he knew about the invasion. And so Brigade 2506 was met by 20,000 Cuban troops who were armed with tanks and modern weapons. In all, about 1,000 were captured and held for 1.5 years, and the rest were killed. All of Brigade 2506 were either captured or killed within 2 days. This led to a few things. First of all, it was a huge failure for the USA because it seemed to everybody that this was a US-backed plan. It strengthened Castro's position in Cuba. He was seen as the savior, as someone who could protect Cuba. Third, it strengthened the idea of communism in Cuba, so Cubans themselves begin to more fully support the idea of communism. Fourth, it suggested to the USSR that Kennedy was a weak president. Remember that this is happening in 1961, at approximately the same time as the Berlin Wall crisis. And fourth, it leads Castro and Khrushchev to become very suspicious of the USA and afraid of another U.S. invasion. So Castro begins to ask the USSR for help and weapons, which would eventually come about. And we will see the effects of this in our next video. So that's the Bay of Pigs invasion. As you can see, it was the perfect failure. However, in 1963, there is a quote by John F. Kennedy. He said, "I believe there is no country in the world, including any and all the countries under colonial domination, where economic colonization, humiliation, and exploitation were worse than in Cuba, in part owing to my country's policies during the Batista regime. To some extent, it is as though Batista was the incarnation of a number of sins on the part of the U.S. Now, we shall have to pay for those sins." So basically, Kennedy was saying, in hindsight, he thought that the U.S. backing of Batista led to the strength of communism in Cuba, and this, in turn, led to all these problems that the U.S. was facing in Cuba during the 1960s. Thanks for watching, and see you next time.
So, a little history lesson. You know, helps give you some framework about what's happening now. It's the same situation, unfortunately, for Cuba. That they were on the verge of striking some diplomatic relationships with the United States, which was really key for them and key for us too. Key for us, I don't mean talk about us, but key for us as African people, you know, the ability then to go freely go back and forth. And of course, that would lend itself to entrepreneurial possibilities. One of the things that Cuba wants to develop. Wanted to develop, from my understanding, was a strong tourism because of the buildings, the history, and so forth, the cars, all of those kinds of things, you know. But, of course, that was prevented, that was squashed because of Trump. And now the possibility of that happening, we'll see. But the Cuban people should be able to determine for themselves if the Cuban government, and once again, I see the people talking in the streets. I know what happened when Fidel Castro made his transition. I remember what was happening here, and particularly in Miami, and you heard some of the news people who were Cuban, who fled Cuba. Some with tears in their eyes, thinking finally that he is dead. Maybe we can finally maybe go back home or whatever, or resume the activity we had prior to him coming into power. I would say for us as Africans who live, who are in Cuba, that may not be a good thing, you know. Because even when I went there, brothers and sisters, maybe just be real, visiting the university where Cuba trains doctors, did not see a lot of us in the hierarchy, and nor has educated. I didn't see it. They didn't show everybody, of course, but the people who came out to talk to us about the university, and then, of course, the students. Oh, man. I think I met about 6 students from Oakland who were there at the time. My friend, Aurelia Mosley's daughter, Joya Mosley, she was in school from Milwaukee, you know, and just training a lot of other doctors. Check this out, though. All you got to do is once you graduate is wherever you go in the United States, just take the board, you know. You pass, and you know, you can practice medicine in that state. Except every state except Florida. Florida would not recognize nobody from Cuba. They did not want to recognize nobody from Cuba. There are some folks who want to join this conversation, please do. You can hit star twice. If you want to join this conversation, hit star twice or dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Whatever you want to discuss, we will. Whatever on your mind, we can do that. But I chose to talk about Cuba today because, you know, I remember being there. I remember going to the school and other places and other parts of Cuba. And another thing that it was mentioned in the documentary, at least the area, the Guantanamo Bay, you know. And there's one documentary that shows that, you know, in that area, which is the south eastern portion of the island, the southeastern, Havana is in the northwestern portion of the island. And I know south, almost in the middle, is where Che Guevara, I visited that area and visited Che Guevara's museum where his remains are. You know, he died in Bolivia. Once again, he was that's what he was, man. He was a freedom fighter. He went to various places to fight, and he was killed in Bolivia. And they got his remains back in Cuba, and he was buried there in the middle of Cuba. And we visited that place. Very warmly welcomed. It was really nice, you know. But definitely would like to go back again. And Southwest Airlines, as I said earlier, they had a flight to Havana. They had a flight from Atlanta to Havana, but not anymore. But hopefully they'll have one again in the future. Well, who knows? We'll see. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. 646-646. Good afternoon.
Hey, Odie Yosh, what's happening, man? How you doing today, my good brother?
I'm doing well, Jay. What about you, man?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Listen, you know, there's a serious, serious contradiction with America when it comes to Cuba. Now, if I'm not mistaken, isn't China a communist country?
Of course.
Okay. Now, Cuba is a communist country. Why don't China have sanctions against them like Cuba do? Could it be that Cuba doesn't have anything really to give to America like China does?
Exactly.
Could that be what it is?
Yeah.
And America doesn't say anything about that. Why don't America never talk about how America made Cuba basically into a cesspool under Batista and the mob?
Yeah.
Why don't they talk about how America was going over there having sex excursions, funneling drugs from Cuba to America, was doing all sorts of dastardly deeds over in Cuba, and Brother Fidel said, F that. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of my people being exploited by these dogs, and I'm going to do something to uplift my people. And because of the nature of the times, he had to align himself with communism.
Yeah.
I mean, that's let's be clear about what's going on in the contradiction. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the Cuban people have a right to self-determination and sovereignty. They have a right for trade around the world, which the America prevents. I mean, right. It's just a damn shame how we as a people are constantly under this conflict of supposedly nationalism from the perspective of being an American and a patriotism. Patriotism, my ass. Get out of here with this nonsense. You know, it's just wrong, man. I mean, why can't the Cuban people and other Latin countries within that hemisphere be sovereign and do the necessary thing to take care of their people without this bastard called America, you know, messing with them, destabilizing them, trying to control them? It's just not right.
Well,
and at some point in time, people need to stand up about it.
Well, see,
and
the
call
thing,
it for what it is.
Yeah, see, the thing is, Jay, is that America is the mass contradiction. On the one hand, it espouses all these things about freedoms and this, that, and the other. While at the same time, it destabilizes countries. It has had numerous wars against other countries, taking other people's resources, regime changes, and so forth. You know, America, you know, on the, like I said, on one side of the coin, it has this great face of being democratic and espousing freedoms and individual freedoms and personal, all that kind of thing. Then on the other side of the coin, of course, it is ruthless. It is dictatorial. It is undermining, you know, and that's what it does, you know, and that's its history. And just like you said, you know, they haven't said a damn thing to the Chinese, who are communists. But of course, the Chinese, of course, went into a serious thing of development. And so the goods that the Chinese had, America needed. And then the Chinese started taking on American debt. So, you know, they can't say nothing too much about the Chinese, hardly at all.
And that's why they go get what they deserve.
You know,
that's why at some point in time, the Chinese are going to stick it to America.
Yeah.
And whatever they get. You know what I mean? Because, you know, you can't do to others and don't think that it won't happen to you.
Sure.
It's just
a
matter of when the Chinese decide they want to put it on them, mm-hmm. that's when they go put it on them. But they go get it. Don't think for a minute. Don't think for a minute the Chinese people are not sitting back waiting for, as one would say, the demise of America. And let me tell you this, and I say it straight up. Whatever happened, they deserve.
Well,
whatever happened, they deserve. Because you have no right. You have no fundamental right to treat people in the manner in which America treats people around the world and expect to not get your comeuppance.
Yeah.
Your comeuppance, it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, because what goes around comes around. You reap what you sow.
And
I believe in the law. Yeah, I believe in the law of reciprocity. No doubt about it.
And it should be a law of reciprocity.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is the Cuban people have a right to govern themselves. And believe me, if America did not have the sanctions on the Cuban people, because of the way that their society is set up, they would flourish.
Yeah.
They would flourish.
Yeah.
And America knows it,
mm-hmm.
but they always want to say and see themselves as the moral authority on the planet. America is a dog nation, man.
And they get
whatever they deserve. And then had the nerve to always want to talk about democracy. And here it is, you got 56 crackers and 2 sick Negroes preventing so-called democracy. That's why it got to fall. It got to fall. Nonsense about some democracy. Democracy is a joke. A Don't let nobody tell you America is a democracy.
No, it's not.
That's the biggest joke in the world.
And it is. It's a plutocracy. It's an autocratic state. It's something. It's an oligarchy. It's where the rich rule.
It's a functioning shithole. Yeah. That's all it is. That's what it boils down to.
You know.
A functioning shithole. That's Ain't nothing great about this. And then you got the salty. You got the salty looking to find new territories going up in the outer space and all that. What they gonna do? Go and colonialize that? Oh man, this white man is something else, man. Yeah. It ain't nothing in the planet like the white man.
Yeah,
and the sad thing is, and the truthful thing of the matter is, we scared of this salt tea. We don't want to do nothing to challenge the salt tea. We don't want to do anything that would make the salt tea unhappy. You know what I mean? It's just sick, man. That's because
they still hold reins over the planet. You know, Europe, United States, Australia, and other countries where they are deeply influenced. You know, and where they can destabilize your government, get rid of your elected officials. You know, there's no doubt about it that the European, wherever he has gone, it has been a detriment to those people. He never brought civilization anywhere, but yet under disguise and in his books. That's why, to me, when they write history, how they write it, they're always going to glorify themselves. That's why it's a damn lie and a travesty when they talk about so-called critical race theory. But yet, they lie all the time. In fact,
that's just a game.
Yeah.
Critical race theory. That's used as nothing more, I'm sorry to say it, but to keep the white man in absolutely outrage and at war with anybody else. I saw a salty peckerwood devil get up, and it's all over the internet talking about, because I don't want my kids learning about critical race theory with the dumb B don't know a effing thing about and what it means. How to truthfully articulate it or even have a clue on how it's implemented or taught. I don't want my kid to learn this or to hear this. And because of that, it doesn't make me a racist. It's you too stupid to know what a racist is. You know, I mean, it just kills me. And then you have this whole media onslaught. You have stupid people talking about it. But, you know, man, they just don't get the right people to push back on it, man. They just don't get the right people to really show the insanity of these saltines when they talk about it and point out how the fact of the matter is you don't even know what the F it is.
Yeah.
Or how to honestly articulate what it is. How are you that, I mean, shallow individual not to admit that America was created and built upon the things that are spoken about with, say, critical race theory? So now you don't want to tell your kids that your history is based on murder, rape, death, thievery. I mean, just absolutely everything that's on the planet that is effed up is basically created by the salty. Name me something that they ain't, that's deviant, that they haven't created.
Let me say, I was watching Mark Lamont Hill talking with Vernon
Jones. Oh, he's an idiot.
Vernon Jones, and they were talking about critical race theory, and of course Vernon Jones is the Negro who here in Georgia was a Democrat, now switched to Republican, and he doesn't have a clue about anything. Vernon
he's
Jones,
an idiot. Both of them.
And but Vernon Jones is now running for governor. He is challenging. Whoa. He is challenging the guy who stole the election from Stacey Abrams. You know,
money grab.
Yeah,
that's all it is—a money grab. He tried to get paid.
And then, of course, Georgia was one of the first states to enact all of these restrictive voting measures, which prompted the Major League Baseball to move its All-Star game this past weekend from Atlanta to Colorado, to Denver, Colorado.
Yep.
And which prompted here in the Atlanta area to have commercials against what Major League Baseball did. They even had some Negro on the commercial talking about it, you know, and how it devastated many of the small businesses. But there was one brother's business. He said, hey, you know, I understand. I make the sacrifice. Yes, I looked forward to making money while it was here. But I also understand that these people were trying to restrict voting rights. And that's not a one-time thing. That's consistently and constantly. You know, the All-Star game was a one-time thing. You know, it'll come back again. In fact, who knows? It might make some provisions that it might come back sooner. Let me take another call, Jay. Hold on, okay?
Yep.
Okay, caller. Unknown caller. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good morning.
Good morning, dear brother. How are you today?
Well, I'm alive, and if I'm alive, I can do better, and better I must do.
I hear you, man. That's right. I like that, Jay. I mean, Paul, I like that, man. Yep. If I'm alive, I'm better, I must do.
I like to Brother Jay as well.
All right.
You were talking about Cuba, and Cuba is a very interesting place. I can't honestly say where I sit with Cuba in terms of my understanding of it. I was in a bookshop, like you can call it a conscious bookshop, yeah? Conscious people, and there was a black Cuban in there. I should say a black man from Cuba. He you know, one of the brothers in there was like talking about Fidel Castro, how he was against capitalism, and how he, we all know what he did. But this black Cuban turned around and he was saying Cuba itself extremely racist. And he was saying that the blacks are treated pretty badly there. I can't honestly say that. I mean, I've met two black Cubans and both of them said similar things. Honestly saying, I know enough black Cubans to actually verify that or confirm that. And to be honest with you, I've got a friend who used to go Cuba regular. He's got a different viewpoint, but these two actually lived there, born there and grew up there. They said, no, it's a very racist place. And one of the reasons why they left because of that reason.
Well, I can't speak to that, but I can speak to the time that I was there and talking with some of the African Cubans or Cuban Africans. That's the proper term as far as I'm concerned. The Cuban Africans is that no, they're not treated greatly. They're not treated badly. They're there. They have much more freedom than what they had under the Batista regime, because under Batista, they were in captivity, literally. You know, they're the divisions of those who have and those who have not were very striking. And they, of course, did not have by design. It was just as if they were just brought there off those ships from wherever to do the work and the bidding of the planters, the tobacco planters, the sugarcane planters, the fruits and so forth, you know. And then if you look at a documentary on the beginnings of Cuba, they stress how that was ended, how sexism was ended, that women became more freer, that Cuban Africans became more freer, you know. I can say just by looking at the situation, I could see where what you're talking about, because even at that time I was there, there were many Cubans who were frustrated with the Cuban government because they lack the kind of resources that can lift all people. They don't have the kind of economy. They don't have the industry. They needed to rely on tourism. And, of course, you're not going to get tourism in America because that was restricted, just like it is right now. Even though Barack Obama had opened that up, but Trump closed it again. And so now, you know, and only country that is helping Cuba is Venezuela, and they can hardly help themselves as well, you know. So it's a very tough situation, you know. But capitalism sure the hell ain't the answer. That's for damn sure. You know, where a small group of people got a whole lot. And see, that's those Cubans in Miami. The Cubans in Miami were the Caucasian-looking Cubans who owned and had wealth and so forth. And they knew that once Castro took over, they were gonna take their stuff, you know, because the whole idea of you can't have some small group of people having a whole lot of stuff at the expense of the majority, you know. So they said, "Bump that. Whatever we can take, we take in, and we move into Miami." And they've been in Miami, and that's also was those people who are in Miami who. Were part of the Bay of Pigs, who part of that invasion that unfortunately did not work, or fortunately did not work for them, and some of them were imprisoned and some of them were killed, you know. But just as the clip I played where John F. Kennedy, because it was started with Eisenhower in 1960, and then it was implemented with Kennedy when he took office in 61. And what Kennedy said, I can see where those countries who are still in colonialism, who are suffering even more so than what is happening in Cuba today at that time. You see? So I could see that. And that's a fact. You know? So, you know, there, yes, from a personal freedom standpoint, if you are an artist, visual artist, vocal artist or whatever, you know, no, you don't have the kinds of ability to exploit your talents and make big money like they do in the West. I understand that because I was talking with some young people who were artists, and they said that's one of the problems. You know, in fact, this morning on the national news here, there were some artists who are from Cuba and some who are residing in Miami who made a video of the problems that are happening in Cuba with in terms of being able to be self-expressive. So these are, you know, these are legitimate issues and problems, no doubt. Go ahead.
I suppose just listening to what you're saying, one good thing would be to actually hear some people who are actually living there in Cuba right now, you know what I mean, and see what they have to say about their, you know, their living conditions and how they see things. Because that, you know, as you're talking, I mean, even the relationship between Jamaica and Cuba, when Manny was in power, Manny was friends with Fidel Castro, and Jamaica had a visit from Henry Kissinger. In Michael Manley, off that relationship, Manley refused to do that. That we then had the CIA infiltrate Jamaica, create the situation of posses and guns and et cetera, et cetera. So we saw all the political violence, and that was a direct result of Michael Manley's relationship with Fidel Castro and the CIA. Undermining Jamaica. By the way, at one stage, the Jamaican dollar was $2 to one American dollar.
Mm.
You know, and I just want to remind people, you know, those who feel that, you know, the immigrants come from the Caribbean to America, I want to remind them that the CIA, American government, done a lot of damage to Jamaica, hell of a lot of damage.
Yes.
It also did a lot of bauxite. The rivers in a terrible, terrible state.
Mm.
When you see those Jamaicans come in, owed something. I want them to remind them they're owed something. They don't just come from the fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
American government taken a lot of that, the Caribbean, especially Jamaica. Mind Jamaica in a massive way. In actual fact, I saw a documentary which actually said, a CIA agent said that the effort they put in undermining Jamaica, very unusual, because for such a small country, they hadn't put so much effort anywhere else. And I find that amazing. I saw that statement up on YouTube.
That's
how they saw Jamaica as a threat. You know, the other thing, I read somewhere that Fidel Castro was of Jewish extraction. I've not been able to verify that, but I read that.
I don't know about that. I just want to say
this about communism. We often look to communism as an answer, well, some of us do, as some type of socialism. But the reality of it is that communism is a Zionist ideology. That's what it is. It's a left-wing Trotsky-Leninist ideology.
Yeah, Karl Marx. And Engels.
And to a certain extent, so is capitalism.
Yeah, and exactly. Definitely capitalism. You know?
Today, right?
Yeah.
Hey, you know, you've said this many times, Baba Ochi, and I think, you know, they play a game. Game they play, you know, and this is why, you know, I hear, you know, Fidel Castro, I read about him, you know, he done well for his cause, but in reality, right, the blacks, they've not benefited under that system. They've not benefited at all because they were never meant to benefit. The black people have been left behind because that system wasn't for no black people. Man, that wasn't for no blacks. That was for them. Their ideologies and their power, because this is the geopolitical game is a game of power. That's all it is. It's who controls the wealth and the power. It doesn't matter whether they're communists, doesn't matter if they're capitalists, doesn't matter what they call themselves. It's the same game they play. I mean, if you look at China, I heard talk about China. Right now in China, it's the select few who still rule.
Right.
You know, the head of the Communist Party, they control everything.
See, that's the thing.
That game ain't changed.
No, that's the thing, Paul. In China, there's capitalism for the few and communism for the rest, for the majority.
Absolutely.
You see? That's the reality of that.
It comes back to what you've been saying for a long time, mm-hmm. right? You know, I was thinking it. Let me ask you this, Baba Ochi. If I came from England, brought, right? For instance, something ridiculous. A golf ball fit to play can football. Would that be allowed?
No.
You laugh, right?
Yeah.
But honestly, sometimes that's how we go about things, yeah? Game is a game of power, and it has rules to it. It's about who controls the power.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? They've taken out of our heads that we can control the power. But we're not going to do it in, like, I think, you know, I've come to the realization that some of the things you say, do it in their game. Set the rules. For instance, you know, they control the whole money system. It's controlled through the Federal Reserve. It's controlled.
Sure.
The whole money system is just one big Ponzi scheme.
Globally, yes.
We don't have a game right now to outwit that game. And because we, in our mentality, we're not even thinking about outwitting that game. We're just thinking about going along to get along and thinking that we're going to win. And we're not going to win.
No, not in that game. Not like that. That's for damn sure. No.
What we have to do, right, we have to develop the mentality to create our own game. And unfortunately, the majority of us haven't got that mentality.
No.
Most of us haven't got it. We have to be truthful to ourselves. The majority of us just want to go along to get along.
Yeah. Well, listen, my brother, I'm 5 minutes past. Paul, thank you, man. I appreciate this. Thank you for calling. I wish we could have more conversation. Because believe me, this is a very deep and tough subject because of what's happening in Cuba and the fact that it has aligned themselves with communism and socialism, which of course is abhorrent to capitalism in the United States and where it's at in other parts of the world. And of course, we also must understand about America, which is the military arm of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. It's the military arm. They have bases all around the world. They can strike your ass in an instant, you know, And that's how they're able to continue to dominate. But only way that we can get out of this is come together, is to unify. It's the only way. Pan-Africanism or perish. Unify or die. That's it. That's the only way. I thank you, brothers and sisters. I got to go. I appreciate you. Have a great weekend. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family. Have a blessed and safe weekend. Hope to see you on Monday.